I would like to introduce the first speaker, Edgar D. from the Sunday Group of NA in the Laurel Mountain Highlands area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Edgar.
Okay, hello everybody. My name's Ed and I am an addict. And I'd like to thank 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people for showing here, the tape man and the two speakers for being here. Obviously, it's going to be a quick one tonight. But you know what? I think I could probably fill up a whole CD by myself. You just bear with me. Get your money's worth at that when you buy this CD. The entire, you gotta buy the book, the box set. I am speaking on What Can I Do? Alright, that's a chapter in the basic text, it's chapter 5 actually, it's what it is, and it is a very powerful chapter, I'd like to say. What that chapter talks about is it starts at the very beginning with step one and ends all the way at the end with sponsorship and covers everything in the middle. Things you should do, things to make yourself better, things to make yourself strong so you can have a good road to recovery. I found that reading that chapter over and over and over has given me lots of insight on the things that I had to do in my early recovery. So what can I do, I guess, you know? As we sit up here at this Unity Retreat, the 15th year of it, it's very noticeable that every time you come up here, you see lots of new faces and stuff, you know? And these people are here for the first time in many cases. So what you want to do for these people is, you know, make them feel welcome. And that's exactly what happens in Narcotics Anonymous. You go to a meeting, it's your first meeting, you're stunned, you're shocked, and you don't know what to do. Somebody walks up and tries to give you a hug, and you shy away because you don't know the routine of being in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And, so you're fearful, you're quiet, and, you know, you feel estranged a little bit. What we do here is we try to get the people in Narcotics Anonymous to extend the olive branch, make a person feel comfortable, and most importantly of all, in my opinion, is make them excited about why they're here, you know. We want them to know that when they come to Narcotics Anonymous, that, it's going to be a new, I guess, surrounding and a new, you know, adventure in your life, you know. This is where you learn to grow up. This is where you have to grow up real fast, too, because, I was lucky when I got here. I was an old fart, you know. And it wasn't so bad adjusting to different people. But as the years gone by, I've seen people come in here that are, you know, quite young, and they're stepping into a world that is totally, you know, alien to them. And in this world, you know, you're learning to deal with so many different things at one time. You know, there's anger, you know, there's resentment, you know, there's, let me see, what else is there? So there's anger, resentment, and there's fear, you know. And all these things combined together is what actually, you know, makes you want to decide whether you want to be here or not. And that's why it's the job of the people that come here and have been here before that person to make them feel at home by welcoming them, making them have, sitting them down, getting them a cup of coffee, introducing them to somebody else that maybe, let's say, is from their area so they can get rides to meetings and stuff. And these are the things we do. These are the things we're supposed to do. We compile lots of ideas in our head when we first get here. And the most important of all is that, you know, when you come here, you have to sit down, you have to listen, and you have to be able to absorb some of the things that are being told, because we'll be speaking in acronyms, you know. We use a lot of words that actually, when I first got here, didn't mean a single thing to me, you know. But now I know what H and I is. Now I know what P and I is. Now I know what P and A is, you know. And, you know, that's some of the things that causes fear in people, because they think they got to learn a whole new language and everything. And we forget ourselves as addicts that have been sitting in these rooms for, you know, whatever time you have, and have been able to learn all about this stuff, you know. And we take it for granted. We think that, you know, everybody knows what PI is or whatever, you know. So, like, you know, this is where it starts. It starts at the very beginning when somebody walks in that door, you know. By walking in a door, I feel that the person has an amount of willingness. I know many people have been court ordered here and have the, you know, have to have papers signed and everything, but like, I've seen a lot of people that come in that have just decided to come in because they're sick and tired of the lie that they're living, and they want to change their way of life. And their way of life is, you know, well, we all know what it's like to be out there using, you know. In my experience, I have yet to see anybody that hasn't beat themselves up for a minimum of at least 15 years. You know, 15 years is a very good average number, you know, because, you know, I mean, that's what it was for me. But for about 17 years, I abused myself and learned to do nothing but get high and learn all the ins and outs on how to, you know. And when I got to the point where it was just, well, you know, the same thing over and over, the repetition of just getting high, scamming, you know, and running around and trying to, you know, find the next, you know, the next high, it came to a point where I couldn't actually really stand it that much anymore, you know. When I first got clean, I come out of a life of marriage, and my wife was an addict also, you know. And what I found out during this entire using time was that we actually didn't actually know each other. We didn't get to know each other until we got clean. And then after we got clean and we realized who we were, we found out that we weren't compatible. So we got, you know, we separated our ways, you know. And you know, and that's when, you know, that's when life started for me, you know. I was by myself. It was in the mid-80s. And I decided that, you know, I want to try to do this, you know. And I was—I consider myself a lucky person because there was a few NA meetings around, and there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting around, well, quite a few of those, and I had to harbor myself between both of them to make myself find the recovery that I was looking for. And, you know, after years in meetings and stuff, I found out that I had to make a choice, you know. I had to choose whether I wanted to be share fellowships or choose a fellowship of my, you know, I guess of my background, you know. And I found out that, you know, obviously narcotics was my, you know, major fault. So I chose Narcotics Anonymous. And from that day forward, when I made that choice, I decided that, you know, this is something that it's going to need investigated, something that's going to need, you know, experimented with, and all the things that come when you first walk into the rooms, you know. I mean, it was great for me because I walked into open arms, you know. I was walking into a room full with people that actually wrote the basic text, you know. And that's, you know, to me that was surprising, you know. And to know these people and everything, and to reach out and to share with them and learn about writing literature and all these things that I've learned in the years. And, but most importantly of all, these people that were here before me gave me that excitement that I needed to keep coming back. You know, I kept on realizing that I wanted to get a little more, so I kept to another meeting. I went to another meeting. Next thing you know, I'm visiting Pittsburgh, you know. Next thing you know, I'm, you know, meeting in at area levels and things like that, you know, from a little group level, you know. And all these things, they intrigued me, you know. I liked knowing about the stuff that happened and how it was formulated and everything, you know. So, you know, that's something that actually caught my interest and made me want to stick around, you know. And as the years go on, you know, Narcotics Anonymous became very famous. I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, very popular because of the fact that, you know what, people were starting to realize that they did have drug problems and there was some way to make themselves better. So, you know, with all this happening and this big turnaround and stuff, you know, I started realizing that, you know, I could play a big part in this. I had an opportunity now to be a part of Narcotics Anonymous and to help others. So that's what I chose to do. I chose to come in here and just, you know, not jump into everything available or anything, you know, but I used to be on literature writing committee, you know. Like I said, I know people that wrote in the basic texts, you know, stuff. It was just so much going on at that time. It was like, you know, it was like opening up a can of peaches, you know. You didn't know what you were going to get there, you know. It was always something in there for you, you know. And so I made the choice, and I said, this is what I'm going to do. I was fortunate enough to have, you know, a lot of good people around me, and they taught me, you know. They taught me things, you know. We did so many things together, you know, with other areas and stuff that, you know, you became part of this big movement that was happening all around the country, you know. Sitting around, you know, waiting for people to come in was the most key part of my recovery, you know. Because sometimes you had to, like, you know, pray that people would come, you know, and sit with you, you know. And it got to that point. But I don't know what it was about me, but I chose not to give up. I chose to sit in them meetings, and I chose to keep them doors open, just hoping that somebody would come in someday. And it came to the point in life where, you know, you almost want to give up, you know, because you're tired of being by yourself, and you just want to, you know, you want to have somebody there to be with you, you know, because, you know, this is supposed to be a group, not a one-man show, you know. And then the days came, you know, they started coming, you know. And the life of Narcotics Anonymous in my town started to flourish. And flourished more, and found out that people were actually interested in what was going on, you know. I remember jumping in cars and driving down to Pittsburgh and supporting meetings down there all the time, you know. And this is what, you know, what we do now, you know. It's the Narcotics Anonymous Fellowship has really blossomed. I mean, I remember being in Johnstown, and there was two meetings, and those meetings are still around. They're very old meetings too, you know. And we had two meetings in our town, which also flourish and are still going to this day. And what can I do? That's the topic here. Well, I did what I could do. I got up there, I went there, I made coffee. I sat there and I waited for addicts to come in and be able to you know, tell them that, you know, this is where it all starts. You know, this is the beginning of what could be a good life and a new life for you. And, you know, people just started coming back. They wanted away from the lifestyle they were living, you know, and they saw that there's an opportunity there for them, you know. And you always struggle, though, you know, like, with the way some of the things were done, you know. It made it, like, a long time ago, there wasn't, like, a lot of information written, you know, on how to, you know, conduct meetings properly and everything. So most of the people would, you know, just kind of, you know, do the best they can to hold it together. I remember meetings where people would put in money in the basket, and at the end of the meeting, we'd go take the money and go eat, you know. Because we didn't know what to do, you know. So we have like $5 and we go have coffee after the meeting, you know. And this is things that, you know, just remind me of how big and how, you know, how fast it's growing, you know. I was in an area where we had two meetings. I take that back. In an area we had like six meetings, including two towns, you know, two counties, excuse me. And, now we got 39, you know, and that's just, you know, that 20 years seems like a long time, but it's, you know, it's really not that long, you know. I mean, 20 years ago, I don't know, maybe our clothes changed, our hairstyles changed, you know, our attitudes changed and everything, but, you know, one thing that hasn't changed is the suffering from addiction, you know. We all were beat down to the ground, you know. We were beat down, and we were, you know, we embarrassed ourselves, we humiliated ourselves, we did everything imaginable to ourselves that would, you know, just for a high, you know. And what the most powerful thing about it now is that these people, they come in and they can see that they don't have to do that anymore because there's enough people around, enough smiling faces, enough good and bad attitudes to see that there's a lot available. And being available is, you know, is the key to this, you know. I remember when we started the helpline, and we actually had commercials running in TV. We went down to Johnstown to the TV station and said, you know, will you run this promo for us, you know? And they had to do it for free, you know, so it was kind of cool, you know. It would be a guy walking into a phone booth, no faces, all you could see is his feet, you know. And his sneakers were all ripped up and everything, and he walked into the phone booth, and you know, you hear him dial his number and stuff. And you hear the lady pick up and go, like, Narcotics Anonymous, can I help you, you know? And that was it. That was what we had on the air, you know? And they played 3 o'clock in the morning when all addicts were up, you know, all the time, you know? They never played it once during the day, ever. But late at night, it was always on. You could see it on all the channels and stuff. It was kind of cool, you know? And that's where, you know, the public information came from, you know? Helpline. That kind of stuff. Right now, as we all know, we're sitting up at a retreat, you know, and we had like 13 people at this retreat. We started off with a picnic, and we had like, you know, 13, 20 people there, you know, and I'm sitting in a room with, well, a lot less people than there were at the picnic, but like, you know what, if I went outside, and we have like over 140 people out there enjoying themselves, doing what they, you know, learn to do. Sit, smile, talk, share, you know, be happy, you know. I mean, I've been to, I don't know, 4 or 5 campsites this weekend, and I have not, you know, every place I've went, I've been treated like a king, you know. I've had steaks, I've had bisques, you know, I've had, you know, soft drinks, all you want, and everything. And the people, they want knowledge up here. You know, they all come up here because they want to absorb some kind of knowledge. You know, and it's just good to be on a delivery end of that sometimes. You know, and that's what I do now. You know, I sometimes get very, very angry with the way some people treat Narcotics Anonymous because I'm embarrassed that our predecessors went through such hard work to get this going. And we just chop it to pieces, you know. We chop it to pieces. We you know. Sometimes I wonder, you know, if having 5 years clean is enough to do something, you know. This just doesn't seem to be sometimes the power of Narcotics Anonymous in these people, you know. And I mean, you know, things happen within ourselves that shouldn't happen, you know. And you know, it does worry me a lot sometimes, you know. I wish that everybody could be like so many people here, you know, like my sponsor and stuff like that, you know. And I don't know, it just seems like sometimes those days are gone. But I don't want to give up because the people are sitting in front of me right now are the future of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. You guys are the ones who are going to be carrying a torch, you know. I was having a discussion with myself a little while back. And I was trying to figure out, who is the top sponsor? Who is the top sponsor? You know, people with 40 years is usually about it, you know. And then I think their sponsor dies, and then they just, like, kind of wait a little while, and they sponsor people, and then they die, you know. So you know what that means? Someday I'm going to be at the top of the list, you know. It's logical. You know, it's got to be logical, you know. I don't understand that, you know. And they're laughing at me over this. This is the true story. This is how it is. Does anybody know who their sponsor is? Who their grand sponsor is? Who their great-great-grand sponsor is? Who their great-great-great-great... I go up as far as my... great grand sponsor. That's as far as I can go. That's all I know, you know. I mean, I probably got a lot of spunkles, you know. You know, they're all out there wanting to be around me and help me and stuff, you know. But like, you know, I wonder that stuff. And those are the people that, like, I feel that we embarrass sometimes by some of our actions, some of the things we do, you know. And, you know, I'm not isolating anybody. I'm actually including myself in some of this too, you know. I've been unspiritual, and I've been spiritual, you know. I can be spiritual, you know. I could talk to people one-on-one, face-to-face. I like that, you know. But sometimes, and I hear this a lot from other people, you know, whenever something happens, they always call me. And you know what? I remember the days when my phone used to ring off the hook. I could go to a meeting miss a meeting for a whole week and I won't get one phone call. You know? It's strange, you know. What, am I better? No. I still do 3 meetings a week no matter what. You know? 25 years clean and I still do 3 meetings a week. You know? That's what I can do for this fellowship. That's what I need to do for this fellowship, you know? Because, like I said, someday, these people that are in this room, you're going to be the sponsors. You're going to be the leaders. You're going to be, you know, I mean, I can't say leaders, but you know what I mean. You know, you're going to be the ones responsible for putting the glue on the meeting floor so the people come and stick, you know? And that's important, you know? I just, you know, wonder sometimes, you know? It's like, I don't know, they probably thought it about my generation when we was getting high and wondering that they said that we're going to be the next presidents of the United States, you know? Well, you guys, your kids might be the next presidents of the United States. Think about that, you know? You know, it's hard to imagine right now. Not at all. Not at all can it happen. It just can't happen, you know? But because what you learn here and what you teach other people and what you want to get out of your life, it's where it starts. It starts right there. There's just no way that the fellowship will survive without you know, people that are willing to spend their time, you know, energy to do this. This is not you don't take this like an aspirin, you know. If you got a headache, you take an aspirin, you know. But if you don't go to meetings and you get sick and you want to use, you don't go to one meeting. That's not going to do it, you know. This is a system of repetition. You got to keep going. Somebody told me that I was still teachable because somebody taught me something up here this weekend, you know. And I just, that lit my head up, you know. That lit me up good because, you know, I'm happy to know that I can still remain teachable, you know, for learn from anybody and everybody. And that's what's important, you know. You know, being able to relate, you know. I'm having trouble. You kids, you're out there, boy, some of you, you know. And I got to let it go, you know. I got to let it go. I'm where I'm at, you know. I'm where I'm at right now, and I've been given a gift, you know. And this gift has given me life more than one way, you know, and more than one time. More than one time has given me a gift. And, you know, I'm just grateful I'm able to say I sat here and be part of this. I'm going to on September 10th, I got asked to speak at a spaghetti dinner. And the freakiest thing happened. My very first sponsor is going to be there. He's from New Jersey. I had 4 or 5 months clean or something like that, and he had 14 years. And he's still clean, and I got 25, so he must have 100. You know, easy 100, you know, easy, you know, and I'm going to meet him again, you know, I've seen him once at one of our conventions, and we talked a very little bit, but this time we're sharing a stage together, and this, I'm going to talk about him, I am going to cut him down, you know, it's going to be fun, and I can't wait for September 10th, I hope you all can make it there. I mean, it's somewhere in Uniontown or something, I guess. You know, but I said, Uniontown, I don't want to drive that far. And then I thought about it. I said, wait a minute, I got to go to Uniontown, you know. And then he told me he was going to be there. And I went, I got to go to Uniontown, you know. So, you know, this weekend has been a fun, fulfilled weekend, you know. I see people that come up every year and we're able to share and continue talking. And I was able to, you know, I got up this morning at 6 o'clock. I made all the coffee up here. I made coffee at the camp. I lit the fire. I made breakfast for everybody. And I just had this all done by 7 o'clock, you know? I mean, you know, that's not normal, right? That's not normal. You don't do that. I don't even do that at home, you know? Or maybe I do. I don't know, you know? My home life versus my recovery life, they're different, you know? I mean, I don't talk about shooting dope at home, you know? I won't. I won't do it. I just won't do it, you know? But when I'm around you people, you know, it's just, you know where I'm coming from. You know where I've been. You know what I've been through, you know? So I could say these things and not feel different, you know? This is why it's a home for me. This is why whenever I get a chance to do something for this, if it's available to me, I want to make it available to everybody else. Did I throw up a CD yet?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I just got the signal. Thanks a few people for coming and listening to me share, and I'm done. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Christina. I'm an addict.
Actually, it would be a great honor of mine to introduce the second speaker, Chuck S., from the 24 Principles Group for 24 Hours Group of NA.
Well, that's a tough act to follow, Edgar. You know. But I'll tell you what, I got into this business a little late in life. I was one of those, I was probably an addict all my life, but I just wasn't a using addict. Let's put it this way. When I was younger, we partied a little bit, you know, and whatever, but I didn't find that drug of choice, the love of my life, until I was in my mid-40s. And the opiates. And I'll tell you what, see, I use with me, myself, and I. I wasn't the party guy. I didn't share with anybody except me, myself, and I. And when I came into this program, they told me to, I had to change. So I changed people, places, and things. Well, that was kind of tough since I used with me, myself, and I. But what it was, I remember one of the things they first told me, one of the simplest things you have to do when you come into this program is not pick up the first one. There's a good idea, you know. It made sense to me. I remember running into Edgar, one of the first meetings I went to. He goes, "Dude, what are you doing here?" I said, "Same thing you're doing here." He said, "That worked out. You know, it was good. We understood each other." And but I'll tell you what, when I came in, you know, I'm 50 years old. I'm looking around, and there's people. I looked around. I saw a fellow that was, you know, this biker. He's got a leather jacket on. You know, I'm thinking, you know, what am I listening to this guy for? You know, what do I have to do? What do I have to listen to this guy for? Then turns out he had 8 years clean. Made sense to me to listen to him. You know, I don't know. I learned something early on. A smart man learns from his own mistakes. A wise man learns from the mistakes of others. So in this program, what I did, I watched, I listened, I took suggestions. As I say, it was tough. One of the suggestions, work the steps or die. You know, but, you know, it's, I use, there's something usually on the end of that, but I'm not going to say it on this tape. But as I say, they said, work the steps, and that's what I was supposed to do. Get a sponsor. You know, that's what they told me to do when you come through here. You know, get a home group. Okay. Hey, get a higher power. There's an idea. You know, something greater than yourself. You know, because, you know, all I knew was the fact that I couldn't do it on my own. You know, I had to have something greater than myself. And I didn't have a problem with it. But, you know, you have to, just something that's inside you, something in there that, you know, that, it's that, you know, I had nothing to give. I was done. I was spent. But they gave me hope. That was the big thing about this program. when I first came in. You know how they tell you, you know, we're addicts until you get a home group. Well, I had about three home groups, you know, three or four home groups. You know, I just figured I'd get them all. That makes it better, you know. But after a while, you settle down. You find one, you know, I like to go to the step tradition meetings, and that's the one I picked. But not that any of the others, there's any problem with them. But they said, make the coffee. I remember this home group I picked. I went in there, and just like Edgar said, you sit down in there, maybe there's one person come in, you know. And so you did it. And I was told you to open those meetings. Why? Because there's maybe some struggling addict, that comes to this meeting. You have to be there for them. And that made sense to me because somebody was there for me. And so that's the thing with it. And as you go on, that's it. It's a... It's you can't, as they say, the one of the big things, you got to give it away. You know, you have to give it away. You have to make that effort. To me, I'm not big on the service thing, other than I used to always try to open the meetings. To me, that's the most important thing. To me, as far as service, I mean, I don't have the time to, I guess I could make the time, that's an excuse, but, you know, to go to area, to go to region or whatever. But I try to be sure the meetings are open, or my home group at least is open. At first I tried to do them all, you know, and how you get into that. And you got to be careful with that because you get into this little syndrome, you know. Oh, the whole world, NA is going to fall apart if I don't go open all those dang meetings. And somebody finally said to me, you know, one of those things you have to remember too. You have to step back and let somebody else. It helped my recovery, opening that meeting. You have to step back and let somebody else have that choice, be able to do that. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing. And, I mean, you know, the prayer, just stepping back. I mean, when I first got clean, I had some legal stuff and I have a professional degree and whatever. That's not important. But the thing was, my name was in the paper. You know, and I've worked in this area for a long time, you know, for 25 years or whatever. My wife goes, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, you know, and it's through this program I said to her, you know something? I'm doing everything I can do. I can't do anything else. You know, it's up to God, and what's going to be is going to be. And what I thought that, you know, when it hit the paper, the whole thing, you know, the whole world was going to end, it was surprising. I had more people call just to ask how I was doing, to be sure I was all right. And I thought, you know, That's God. That's a blessing there. You know how we always get the big negatives going in life. But, you know, that's the thing. What are you going to do next? Well, you have to trust God. You have to give Him, you turn it over to Him. And sometimes, you know, we turn it over, we don't leave it there. We like to take it back. We turn it over, we just take it back, you know. Sometimes, and it takes practice to do that, you know. You have sometimes just leave it there and see what happens, you know. And sometimes it's quite surprising what happens when you do that. I don't know, to me, that's what I had to do. Learn to leave it there. And the biggest thing, too, that what made sense when I first came in here and what do I do now? Well, you just got to keep it one day at a time. They told me, keep it one day at a time. Keep it simple. That KISS principle. I love that KISS principle. And keep it, you know, I apply that in business, you know, and when you go out, you keep it simple. It's surprising, you know, hey, I have the KISS principle. They don't even know, you know, they think it's something else, but... I don't tell them where it comes from, you know, but that's where it comes from. Keep it simple. People appreciate that. Even non-addicts appreciate if you keep it simple, you know, because you can complicate the crap out of things. I don't know. That's some of the beauties of the things that they told me. You know, what do you do now? You just, you try to help the newcomer. You try, you know, sometimes do things. One of the nicest things that I heard was the fact you just do something and don't expect anything in return. You know, that's always, you know, you do something just, you know, just because you're going to do it. That's all. And I don't know. I got my eyes open. You know what? The blessing of this program is the fact that here I am. I'm setting up here at a NA retreat. And I'll tell you what, 15 years ago, I would have never thought that this is what I've been doing. You know, 10 years ago, okay? 10 years ago, you know, I come in, I'm happy to be alive. I'm a struggling drug addict. And about 3 months ago, I ran in a race. I'm 60 years old. I'm fat. I smoked till 2 years ago. And I ran in a triathlon. And I just did part of it, but I crossed that finish line. I'm laughing. I'm thinking to myself, you know, what did I do? I did something I never did before. And sometimes that's a lot of fun. You know, this program has given me the confidence to do things I, you know, never thought I would do. And that's a great thing. And I've also met a lot of people that I never would have met if it wasn't for this disease. But you know what also? That I have confidence that this is what it was supposed to be. You know, this is the way my life was supposed to happen. And that's cool, you know? I got a hoot out of that, you know? Life's a hoot. Life's a lot of fun, you know? You can have a lot of fun and you know, I don't know, we went up to my hunting camp, and this is something that, I guess my son said to friends of mine, he said, my dad must have been really crazy when he was drinking. And they go, oh no, they all chimed in at the same time. He's crazier now. So that's a blessing. That's a blessing. You know, life is, it's a blessing. And I don't know, you know, just because you can't use doesn't mean your whole world ends. Trust me. You know, it's actually the beginning of your whole life. The only thing I regret is the fact that I didn't get this about 40 years ago, but it's nice, you know, that's all I have tonight. So I thank you for letting me talk. All right. Mm-hmm.